Welcome back in everyone to an incredible new episode of Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We have two phenomenal guests joining us, two Tony nominated guests joining us. We have the creator Larry Kerwin and the actor Constantine Maroulis, who are joining us to talk about the new show, All the Rage. It's being performed as a benefit for Emerging Artists Theater on March 12th at 7 p.m. at the Street Theater, which is also known as TADA. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting emergingartisttheater.org. We are so honored to have these guests with us, and we can't wait to dive into this great new work that's getting a lot of buzz around the city. So let's go ahead and welcome in our guests, Larry, Constantine. Welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
It's a pleasure. Great to be here.
Yes, it really is. What an introduction.
Thank you. Well, I'm over the moon that you two are joining us today. I can't believe this is real, but more to the point, I can't believe you've got this great new show, All the Rage, happening. Larry, can we start with you and have you tell us a little bit about what the show is about?
Well, I've written about 20 plays and musicals and collaborated a lot, but around the time of the pandemic, actually the first week of the pandemic, I realized I always wanted to write a two-person show, a two-person musical, because you could really delve into the characters that way. But I couldn't figure out, this has been an ambition for some years, but I couldn't figure out what to write it on. And then some months before that, my friend Rick Ocasek from The Cars had died. And it struck me as I sat down the first day to do something new, I just kept thinking about Rick, and, you know, he had so much success, so much fame and everything, and yet he died alone in his mansion in Gramercy Park. And it came to me all of a sudden, I should write about rock and roll, because it's a subject that I'm just so closely involved with. I was the leader of a band called Black 47 for 25 years. We did pretty much everything. We did 2,500 gigs in that period of time all around the world. And I had never totally written about that world. And it struck me also with a first thought, nobody really has, because you have this Hollywood or Broadway version of it, which is very little to do with the world I knew, which was a lot of violence around it, even being on stage. And rock and roll came from violence with Teddy Boys in the 50s in Ireland and England. And when I first started playing, I was playing in clubs for Teddy Boys, and fights would break out. So you had to learn, I was playing bass then, you had to learn how to stand on one foot and play at the same time, because you had to kick the people off the stage. So it was, you know, that kind of world I knew had never been presented. But I had lived in the East Village, been part of the new wave punk scene there in the late 70s and 80s. And that was a particularly vibrant time in New York. So I thought, let me set it in that period. But I wanted it to be current too. So I came up with this band called the Blue Diamonds, and there's two people in it, Rick and Shelley, who are the leaders. They're romantically involved. They're doing really well in the East Village, and they get their first video on MTV. And then someone from Letterman sees them on it and says, this is a great band to have on. And they get invited on to Letterman. So they're made in a certain sense. So come the day of the taping of Letterman, Rick doesn't show. Shelley has a breakdown. She moves back to Larchmont and meets someone else, has a kid with him, gets married, and lives a very different type of life. And then 23 years later, she has a reason to come back to look for Rick. The reason is that one of their songs is going to be in a new movie called Avenue A, and that the directors and producers of the film have offered a lot of money for another song by this great band, Blue Diamonds. So she arrives back in the East Village in his old apartment where they lived, and that's when the book begins.
Yeah, man. Yes. Hey, thank you. Good night, nurse. When I'll see you opening night. And that's how he transfixed me into being a part of this. I mean, you have to understand, I have an older brother that was his scene. My sister was into new wave. So to hear Larry be able to talk about it from like this perspective, having been there and being someone that was born in New York, that's always been fascinated with like the birth of the New York rock and roll scene. The underground is something that's always been intoxicating. Although I'm kind of like into pop and shiny things as well, and glam stuff and all, I've just always appreciated that underground. But I just like wasn't cool enough, right? But I definitely tagged along with my brother to some stuff. I definitely went to an all ages punk rock show at CB's on Sundays. If Larry remembers, they had those for kids. I went to a couple of those in high school. I don't know. I mean, I was, and I saw, and there, it was wild. I had never seen anything like that. And, I generally was the suburban kid once we left the city, and a bit more into like always into rock, but a bit more into like Grateful Dead and kind of this Woodstock era kind of San Francisco thing that really got me at first. And then I started discovering like classic rock and more of the underground stuff. But so I would dabble into the dark side with my brother and some friends and such like that. So like, yeah, this story really spoke to me, that dynamic that he's speaking of. I mean, truly, if you can accomplish, that kind of storytelling in a show, two people, the band, this dynamic, then we will have accomplished something really incredible. And I think, we're on our way towards that.
Yeah, it's been great working with Constantine and with Chelina Kennedy. Chelina I worked with in Paradise Square and on some other projects too, one about Iraq. So just to see the world arise, it's almost like a stab in my own heart looking at, because I'm looking back at my own youth. And then the other part is that as we went along with it, I realized even though the broad outlines of the story of the two people are not my story, yet there's all this autobiographical stuff that surfaces in the show that I wasn't even aware of, until I could step back and just listen to these guys and watch them. And it's been an eye-opener for me too, and I can tell it's an eye-opener for Chelina and Constantine. It's like we're constantly discovering things. And what I'm trying to do is show what rock and roll is really like. And you're seeing it through the eyes of these two people, Rick, played by Constantine, who's looking back at his career and finding that something has been missing. And then realizing that what it is the woman that he was in love with is back. Now she's a different person. She's married and she has a child, and they're trying to come back together in a musical way, but of course the spark has always been there between them. And but it's complicated because 23 years and different worlds have passed in that time. And that's what they're digging at the whole time and becoming themselves again until the very end. I've been working on it since the pandemic. So to try and build that drama in between that gives them something new in every scene that's happening, that's throwing them around. And yet, see, can they come back in touch with each other despite all the these dramas that are happening?
That is incredible. What a show. What, I'm already sold. I don't even see this. I'm already sold. That story alone is amazing. Wow. Now, Constantine, I want to ask you, as we roll into this benefit, what has it been like developing the show and the role that you're developing?
I mean, it's been wonderful. I think it's every actor's dream to take on new works, exciting, innovative, new storytelling, capabilities. You know, in a show like this, there's really so many places we can go, you know, from a design perspective, from musically. I mean, it can go from abstract to completely in your face, immersive rock and roll. And to be able to generate the power from this, you know, just a couple of people will be really cool emotionally and, you know, just with sound and such. For me, yeah, you know, I've worked with Karen before. She's helming this incarnation of the show at the festival. Karen Carpenter as director. We worked on something a few seasons ago. Chalina, I've never met, but we just hit it off right away. And I saw her in Jesus Christ Superstar, I remember, at first, and I've sort of followed her career. And she's an incredible, she knows a lot of Canadians, I know.
Me too.
She's just an incredible singer, and she's a mom, you know. Our kids are close in age, so we just have like a lot in common. We just kind of hit it off from this. Like, I felt like I have known her a long time, like in this dynamic. So, yeah. And, you know, for me, obviously, we're only afforded a handful of rehearsal time and slots for this. And then, boom, we just kind of put it up. I would love to dig into it, you know, in a truer rehearsal setting and get to really put it on its feet and stage it with great design at some point. But yeah, for now, it's just about hearing the words, you know, having Larry a chance to kind of envision it as we are saying the words, singing these songs, you know, connecting on these scenes, and then seeing where it can go. You know, right now it feels really nice, but all shows evolve, and that's what's so beautiful about them.
It's amazing. Wow. I am sure there's much, much more life after this performance on Tuesday the 12th than just the one. So that's exciting. Larry, coming back to you as the creator of this, with this fantastic story and the really heartbreaking but inspiring inspiration behind it, is there a message or a thought you hope audiences will take away from the performance?
You know, I usually do work that's political and often historical, so there's usually a driving motif behind that. But with this one, it was more to explore the world of rock and roll, because I've lived it, and so it sweeps past me and goes around me, and I often don't analyze it in any way. But also to see what time does. What does time do to two people that were so united in their youth, and then you set them apart in different worlds and they get back together? What happens? Can they rekindle old things? I think they can, but at the same time, the worlds that they've inhabited do get in the way. And so, yeah, I don't want the audience to think anything. I just want them to come and see what the world of rock and roll is like and what the world of Rick and Shelley is like too, through the eyes of Constantine and Chalina.
That is amazing. And I kind of want to snowball off of that and come to you, Constantine. As you're creating this role, what is the message or thought you hope audiences take away from the show?
You know, it's those behind the scenes moments about being creative with friends and colleagues. Like, there's just something about being in a band that is, I played sports, you know, I've been in shows, but there's just a dynamic about a band, and especially a two-person band, you know, White Stripes, let's just say. So imagine the dynamic there, you know? I mean, some people will tell you that Meg White is maybe the greatest drummer, like, in modern, like, rock ever. And then other people will say, you know, without Jack White, this and that, you know, and then behind the scenes, like, were they together? Were they not, like, you know, going from a garage to like world famous, you know, in more recent times, I think people can probably relate to, you know, that kind of dynamic, right? As an image. But there's just something about being in a band, and there's a way you speak to each other that's either like of the most respect, you know, you could ever shower onto someone, or with a look, you can destroy them inside, you know. And we're so like cruel to each other sometimes in this like terribly passive aggressive way, like when things are maybe not connecting the way they should. And it's something about like your brothers or sisters in a band that like, right, Larry, it's just this otherworldly kind of like pain, but love, but just, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, you see it in the most popular of rock bands ever. I mean, how can Mick and Keith not get along all the time? How did the Eagles, you know, a lot of them hate each other? How did, you know, whatever, Genesis, I mean, every band, you know, Black 47, you know, my bands in the past, you know, there's just this dynamic that's indescribable. And I think Larry's managed to capture that essence. And in, you know, obviously it's just an 80 minute kind of just like, I don't know, close up on these two. But I think everyone can kind of relate to that. It's just like, wow. Yeah. It's so codependent and fucked up. It's so beautiful. It's so dark and nasty. It's cutting. It's, you know, inspirational. It's all these things. There's just something about the dynamic of a band. And look, I've gotten to have some fun with shows like Rock of Ages, where we did really manage to find like this heartful ground place, especially for my character, Drew. There's all this craziness happening around it, but that's like a heightened look at like a very specific era. Here we are getting into like the really, it's almost like, it's really just it's about the two of them. It's like when you, I don't know if you saw Maestro, Andrew. I think the most beautiful thing about Maestro, besides like the filmmaking and this, I mean, this person's epic career and, you know, just body of work, but it was really about the two of them. It was really just ultimately a movie about the two of them, right? In this relationship. And the genius is almost like outside of that. It's about like just that primitive dynamic between two people.
You see, when you've been in a band with someone, and it doesn't matter because my career stretches way back, I can go back to my hometown and see a guy on the street that I actually grew up playing with 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. And there's an instant bond. We mightn't have seen each other, but we're brothers or sisters at that point. And everything just fades away, and you remember the moments you were on stage together. Because you see, to me, there's two types of rock music. There's rock music, and then there's rock and roll. And I've never been as fond of rock music as I am of rock and roll, because rock and roll is about finding that moment or hitting that moment on stage where everything explodes and takes off. So with Black 47, we did 2,500 gigs or more, and you were always waiting for that moment. And sometimes it didn't come till later on, and we would do 2-hour shows, but usually it would come pretty suddenly, and we might be on a different song each time. It would be something the audience would spark. So that's something that's always forgotten about in rock music, the sparks that happen and that explode and create new worlds.
I love all this.
No, I was going to say, in a way, bands are a dying breed. Yeah. And I hope that's just a cyclical sort of thing that's happening right now, where, and then they will come back even stronger. I do feel like you're starting to see guitars all over popular music again, whereas I feel like they took like a decade off. It was not cool to use guitars in production, but like, you know, I guess pop songs and such, hit rock, but now they're back and everyone's kind of playing guitars again. So maybe bands will come back. I mean, I feel like the last scene in New York was 20 years ago in and of itself. I mean, this show sort of, we meet them about 2009, right? So after the last economic crash of like 2008 with the banks and Wall Street and such. And oddly enough, that's when we opened Rock of Ages. We ended up being this show that people needed at the time, you know, like we tried to make it an affordable experience. We offered a lot, you know, they got to come and drink, and they just instantly got back to this, like, you know, fun, nostalgic time where they remember like being happy and stuff. So in a way, these characters are searching for that after all that's happened to them, and maybe someone to blame for like all that's happened between the two of them as well. So like we always, oh yeah, it's TikTok's fault. You know, I can't get my songs out. Oh no, I mean, the labels, they don't pay anything. Oh, Spotify doesn't pay. You know, we're always looking to blame someone else, like as like a musician, and maybe it's and we find with these two, it's in the space between them, you know, and when they're apart as well. So,
you know, the one thing that theater has that rock music doesn't have, it has incubatory spaces. Like this piece, All the Rage, began in a place called The Cell on 23rd Street, where began also Hard Times, which I wrote, which eventually became Paradise Square. So without places like that, you know, it's hard to get things moving. So we did an earlier version of this at The Cell with Kira Simmering directing. And then you have the thing with producers here, which is important too, that we have three producers who put time and money into this. There's Peter LaDon, whom I first met when he came to see Hard Times, and Chuck Braverman, who's from LA and came in and is filming different things about my life and everything. And that's how he got into theater. And then there's the one and only Adam Weinstock, who's joined the production team. And then there's, you know, there's Mark Pfeiffer, who's just a great musical director and adds so much to it. So, and Karen Carpenter, of course. So there's this team that you have in theater that you don't have in rock music as much. It's kind of like everyone for themselves, and then you crash into three or four other people and you create a band and sparks happen and all sorts of things can happen, including breaking up and then going on to something different. But it's great that theater has that, those circles that can sustain plays and musicals that can move them forward.
People to blame, other people to blame. There's more people to blame.
Yeah. The theater.
No, it's cool. We've gotten to work downtown. Larry's got a beautiful home and studio there, and we've been working sort of, you know, we've been working all together, and it's been really, really awesome, really mellow. And, you know, the downtown has changed so much, but it's like you can feel, especially early in the morning when there's not a lot of people around, you can really feel like all the ghosts, man, all the stories and, you know, just everything, all the artistry that's just gone on, you know, decades and decades. So we're feeding off that for sure.
Definitely.
Well, that is all fantastic. And it's going to lead to my final question for this first part, which is, who do you hope have access to this piece? And Constantine, I'm going to start first with you, if that's okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, you want to just put these things out into the ether. You know, obviously you've attached two actors. The two of us, you know, have gotten to do some cool stuff over the years. So it's just going to like be out there. And the next step is, you know, gathering more information, audience, vibes, feedback, you know, how Larry wants to proceed. I mean, it's his world, you know. Is there a partner available out of town to, you know, maybe put up the show and host a show? Is it something that, you know, there's no true path anymore to like what we deem successful is getting to Broadway, but maybe not, you know, having the kind of run that you want successful just because you went to Broadway, or, you know, maybe incubating a show, or maybe it goes to license first. Maybe it's on the road first before it comes to a New York official run. Maybe it exists off Broadway. Is it a film? You know, like all of these possibilities, right, with shows. Or is it the show that gets you to the next collaboration with these people? You know that. So I think for us, yeah, I think there's so much cool, interesting new stuff out there. And I feel like support as much as you can. I think we're pretty sold out, but I do think it's overall an affordable ticket to support festivals like this. I think it's probably interesting for them to have, like, you know, a few Tony nominees and people that have been on Broadway and stuff there as well. So it's kind of been this fun kind of cooperative all around. So for me, yeah, I hope people dig the tunes. Maybe they're, I mean, we've seen what happens with shows like Be More Chill, let's just say, obviously, you know, that starts as like a demo, right? And then it's like a demand for like a record and then a show. And that, you know, so it's like, who's to say what needs to happen first or last? Or, you know, I think Larry's tunes are great, but they really fit into the show and the story. You know, they're not just written to be, I don't know, hits or something. They're written to further the story, and the lyric then kind of takes you, it's their songs that they're playing, but then there's sort of this discovery of like, were we writing these songs about each other the whole time?
Right. Yeah, you know, who knows what a hit is anymore?
Right.
With Black 47, we had a hit, and why I brought up Rick Ocasek. When we were making an album called Fire Freedom, he and I were producing it, co-producing it. And there was a song on there called Maria's Wedding. And I was sure that that was a hit. And he said, no, forget about it. It's a song called Funky Kaylee. And I was saying, but it's so Irish and everything. Who's going to listen to that in alternative radio? And then sure enough, it goes on alternative radio and it becomes a hit. So I was totally wrong. And Rick, Lord of mercy on him, was totally right. So you just don't know where your break is coming from. But the way I would see this show progressing is to go out of town someplace and do it somewhere where there's a tradition of theater and rock music and put it in front of people, as it's a human story. Everyone in their lives has had someone that every now and again they think, what would have happened if that relationship had matured and we'd gotten married or whatever? What would have happened? You know, and since you're in your own one, as happy as it may be, but it never stops you from thinking. But that's what this show does. It constantly is spinning you back into memories of someone else and what would have happened with them. So I think it's very human, and at the same time, it'll show people what real rock and roll is about, you know, as seen through the artistry of Constantine and Shalina. And to my mind, man, when you see these two people connecting in my room, I can only imagine what they're going to do on stage. Because yesterday with the final scene, we read it for the first time, and I was in tears after. It was like, and I'm not that easy to cry. I've been through a lot in my time, but it's like, oh,
he's
my
a hardened, God. A hardened lad.
Oh. I try not to be, but life is tough out there.
You named your band Black 47. No, no, man. Thank you, Larry. That's awesome. And you know, and again, it's important to know that this is still really almost like an open rehearsal, you know, where we're going to be reading the play. We're going to be basically standing there, you know, with a very stripped down version of what the music will sound like. It's just basically piano, very little guitars, and like djembe accompaniment on percussion. It's like so minimal. And I'm not even sure, we're not even sure really what the overall sound system is going to be there. It's what I like. It's a little bit of a plug in and play sort of scenario. And yeah, I think, you know, Larry and I have done plenty of that over the years where it's like, no sound check, fuck it, let's go.
Stage, do it.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we're just going to kind of get a sense as to like the emotional beats of the show, like right there in the room with the audience for the first time. It's not like we've been working on this for a year, you know, together. Yeah. So that's, it's sort of very new to us too. Like, so Chalina and I, like, as we read these scenes for like the first times together, we're like really discovering right there, like a lot of stuff happening. So it's pretty cool.
And if anybody would like to check out the music and there are some videos, you can just go to alltherage.live. All one word, alltherage.live.
On the second part of our interview, we love giving our listeners a chance to get to know our guests. Pull the curtain back, if you will. And I know we're short on time, but I can't let the two of you go without asking our favorite question, which is, what is your favorite theater memory?
For me, we used to watch West Side Story as a family together. I'm the youngest of three. My brother and sister are much older. And that's an original poster from the film back there. And it was just so magical to me, right? And so real. And then I got to see my brother, who's 11 years older than me, in West Side Story, playing Bernardo. And I remember being about 5 years old and just having it feel so real to me, right? In this high school production, just like this feeling being like transported over the audience, like on stage, watching my brother in like, you know, the rumble and, you know, the death and the dream ballet. And, you know, during, you know, singing, you know, during Tonight and America and all of this with the girls. And it's so vivid in my head that it's just wild, man. Yeah. So, and obviously there's been a million great instances since, like obviously being at the Tonys with my show Rock of Ages and such, but it's that early memory for me that's just like, yeah, there's nothing else in the world I want to do but that. Whatever this is, that's what I am, that's what I'm gonna do. And yeah, I mean, I know people know me from television on American Idol, but this has been something that's been birthed in me from like sperm, you know, so womb to tomb, sperm to worm, you know, so yeah, so there, that's that for me. What about you, Larry?
I think my favorite was when my first play was produced. It was a play called Liverpool Fantasy, and it's about the Beatles, if they hadn't made it. Mm. And we recreated that world where Paul goes off to Las Vegas and comes back as a famous artist. Paul Montana is his name now, and he decides to get the Beatles back together for a TV show. And the other three have been waiting for him for 25 years to come back. And so just putting that up and seeing that it worked, and that the actors, even though sometimes they didn't even look that much like the four Beatles, that acting could bring those four Beatles to life, and that the story had validity, and that it was real, and that you could see an alternate universe. So I just think when I did that, I was thinking, yeah, I did it, because I didn't know I could do it or anything. So the advice to me, from me to anybody out there who's a writer or an artist of any sort, is do it. Because once you do it, you'll either fall on your face, which we all do from time to time, but you'll hit something and it will change your life.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant advice. And what wonderful memories. Those are fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing those. Well, as we wrap up, I just want to ask two last questions. And the first being, do either of you have any other projects or productions coming on the pipeline that we might be able to plug?
I have another one that's showing. There's a showing of it on the next week after this one. It's called The Informer. You might know the movie, the John Ford movie. It was also a book by Liam O'Flaherty. So a guy called Bobby Maresco asked me to do a stage version of that. So at the American Irish Historical Society, which is right opposite the Met, we'll be showing that on Saturday the 23rd. So that's my next one. It's almost next week.
Whoa, just way to like piggyback those shows together. That's wild. I look forward to that. We have to check that out for sure. Larry, do you have, you know, you're not Mr. Social Media, but do you have a website or something like that that you use, or a Facebook?
Yeah, I use a lot of Facebook, my own one, Larry Kerwin, but I also have a show on Sirius XM called Celtic Crush. So that has a big Facebook following. If you look up Celtic Crush or black47.com, usually stuff goes in there too. I'm reachable. I'm out there.
And yeah, we'll give out your address on the next podcast, but
not my physical address.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, for me, Definitely working on some new music. I put out a couple of original singles late last year and working on some new stuff now that'll be out, you know, definitely, you know, middle of this year as well. So I'm always out playing shows, whether with my solo band. I'll be March 23rd in Westchester, Pennsylvania, this beautiful theater called the Uptown Nauer Performing Arts Center. So I'll be there with my solo band doing my original music, but also, like, you know, my kind of mix of like Broadway rock and pop hits, kind of my style with a great band. And then I'll be out in April doing a bunch of shows as well. I'll be at the Star Center in Havarti Grace, Maryland on April 6th. I'll be out with Foreigner's Journey doing some shows. I start this thing in New Jersey in April as well, and another new musical you'll hear about soon. And yeah, so I try to keep everyone posted on socials. You know, my website is still pretty updated, ConstantineMaroulis.com or at ConstantineMaroulis on Instagram. And you can find everything else through that. But yeah, some great shows coming up. And but definitely always looking for cool collaborations. And, you know, I'm a father to a 13-year-old daughter who plays three sports, and she's on the, you know, high honor roll and Junior National Honor Society. So it's a full-time gig, you know, staying on top of her situations as well. So yeah, her mom and
that's,
I,
that's only beginning.
You know, mate. Yeah, it's just like, so we do what we can over here. We do what we can in Jersey. I'm in Jersey now, so I do what I can. But yeah, thank you, Andrew. That basically that's the gist. Got the gist.
That's all amazing. That's all amazing. So, wow. Well, thank you both so much for your time today, for speaking with me, sharing this amazing piece and all your wonderful insight. This truly has been an honor. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been
thank
a pleasure.
You, Andrew. And to the wife for her hair and her support in my other show there. So,
well, thank you. My guests today have been two incredible artists, two Tony-nominated artists, the creator Larry Kerwin and the actor Constantine Maroulis, both who are doing the show All the Rage, which is being performed as a benefit for Emerging Artists Theater on March 12th at 7 p.m. at the Street Theater, also known as TADA. And you can get your tickets and more information by visiting emergingartisttheater.org. We also have some great contact information for our guests, as well as the show, that we'll be posting on our episode description, as well as on our social media posts. But you are going to want to hurry and head over to emergingartisttheater.org and get your tickets now. This is going to sell out. This is an incredible new work. This is not the last we're going to hear about it, I guarantee it. But the show again is All the Rage, happening March 12th at 7 p.m. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about the theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.